In his address to the nation last night, President Obama vowed to degrade and ultimately destroy the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, the Sunni extremist group known as ISIS or ISIL.
The president announced expanded airstrikes not only in Iraq, but also in Syria.
Edward Terzansky joins us now. He's the John Templeton Fellow of the Foreign Policy Research Institute and scholar in residence at LaSalle University. Ed, welcome back to the show.
Rob, thanks for having me.
Let's kick this off with a short excerpt from the president's speech.
First, we will conduct a systematic campaign of airstrikes against these terrorists. Working with the Iraqi government, we will expand our efforts beyond protecting our own people and humanitarian missions so that we're hitting ISIL targets as Iraqi forces go on offense. Moreover, I've made it clear that we will hunt down terrorists who threaten our country wherever they are. That means I will not hesitate to take action against ISIL in Syria as well as Iraq. This is a core principle of my presidency. If you threaten America, you will find no safe haven.
So, Ed, in that clip, two sides of the border, let's start in Iraq. The idea that, okay, we're not just using airstrikes now to protect Americans there. We are going to use them as, in effect, air support for Iraqi troops. Do you think that's an effective change of plan?
It all depends, Rob, on the extent to which the Iraqis can pull themselves together and be a reliable component of what we intend to do. Specifically, whether they can provide the ground action that you need in order to do what the president said, degrade and then ultimately destroy ISIS. And this is an open question. The Iraqis still don't have a defense minister. They are not nearly as composed as a government as they need to be in order to be a predictable component of what it is that we intend to do. So I would say that part of the operation very much is still up in the air because we don't quite know how the Iraqi government is going to perform or pull itself together. Also keep in mind that Nouri al-Maliki, who we thought had been sidelined, is now the vice president of the country. So there's still a good deal of dissension within the Iraqi government that makes it makes it difficult to predict how effective they're going to be. The Kurds are a different story. The Peshmerga are a much more efficient, motivated, organized fighting force. They are worthy of our support on the ground. The Iraqis, specifically the Shia, still need to prove themselves.
And we heard reports in the initial sweep of ISIS around big parts of the country. You heard Iraqi soldiers saying, our officers ran on first contact. We dropped our weapons and followed them. Has there been any effort to reform that? Will airstrikes have the possibility to give the officer corps of the Iraqi army more backbone, in effect, to stick it out in a battle?
Well, Rob, in addition to airstrikes, what we're also talking about is U.S. advisors on the ground, presumably, and I'm saying presumably because we just haven't had much detail as of this point in time, mm-hmm. but presumably to help pull the Iraqis back together and to try to restore some discipline. This thing went sideways very badly. When we pulled out all of our troops, there wasn't a residual force. And at that point, al-Maliki was free to pursue his more sectarian interests. He went to the Iranians, cut his deal, immediately came back to Iraq, and started to dismiss the Sunnis and the Kurds from the military and from the government. And in the end, he was left with many of the members of his clan and his ruling party who weren't representative of the country nearly to the extent they needed to be, and in too many cases were corrupt and weren't the right people for the job. So to get to the heart of your question, we'll see what happens when our trainers on the ground start working with the Iraqi military to see what the status of their force is and how quickly they can be pulled together into a disciplined and effective fighting force.
So a lot of question marks in Iraq. Things are even more complicated, if anything, on the Syrian side of this, where ISIS also operates. The president says the border doesn't protect you anymore, we will bomb first just across the border, maybe further into Syria to target ISIS. What effect do you think that might have?
Well, here's the interesting thing. So let's go back a year, September 10th, 2013, where President Obama gave a speech to the nation and to the world and said, Assad's really bad. I want to bomb him, and I want Congress to come back. I want them to be full partners in this. Fast forward a year later to last night, September 10th, 2014, and the president says, I now want to bomb the guys who are opposing Assad, and I really don't need congressional approval. I've got it. I just need the extra money approved for this. That certainly does point to some, I'll say, inconsistency to the point of incoherence, and also it exposes how very difficult any operation against Syria is going to be. One thing you don't want to be is Assad's air force, because then you wind up being Iran's air force. That's what you do by bombing ISIS if you're not careful. The other thing, the president talked about a coalition that he is pulling together. Now, keep in mind, when George Bush had 34 states, then Senator Obama and other Democrats said, this is woefully inadequate. This is not an international force. You're going it alone. Currently, we have 9 states who are with us, and 2 of them today, Germany and the United Kingdom, said that they will not participate in any bombing operations in Syria. We're not quite sure as of this moment who is going to be doing the bombing, how that's going to look. And finally, there's the question of ground forces in Syria. 2 weeks ago, the president said, and this was his word, it's a fantasy, the notion that we can take people who were pharmacists and doctors, lawyers and farmers, give them weapons and expect that they would fight against Assad. Well, now it appears as if we're going to turn to that same cohort and give them weapons in the thought that they will fight against ISIS. Again, it's very difficult to discern what the exact elements of the strategy are as of this moment.
We're discussing President Obama's proposed strategy for combating ISIS. We have Ed Terzansky with us. He's a political and national security expert. He's with LaSalle University.
And we want to hear from you. Should the U.S. play a leading role in the effort against ISIS? Do you support the idea of U.S. air attacks on the group in Iraq? And what about in Syria? Where should we draw the line on American support? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're talking about President Obama's address to the nation last night, where he vowed to destroy the extremist group ISIS. Edward Terzansky is with us. He's the John Templeton Fellow of the Foreign Policy Research Institute and scholar in residence at LaSalle University.
And we'd like you to join the conversation. Do you agree with the president's plan to step up the air campaign against the Islamic State movement in Iraq, in Syria, both, neither? And should we be doing more or less or nothing at all when it comes to ISIS? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email talk@WPR.org. You can also tweet at Central Time WPR. Before we get to our callers, Ed, you mentioned just before the news that the topic of ground troops. Is President Obama's goal to degrade, destroy ISIS realistic without some kind of outside ground troops?
No, I don't think it's possible. And one of the difficulties, Rob, is that the president has spoken for some time about a campaign of degrading and decapitating. And there was some confusion last week because he used the word manage. So do you want to destroy them or manage them? What is the real objective? The only thing people have known is that we had started attacking from the air and we would continue to do that. ISIS now, in response, knows what is coming. So what they are starting to do is to position assets in populated areas or in mountain areas. which are very hard to get to by the air, and more specifically, if you're in a heavily populated area, and this is the Hamas strategy, you take your weapons, you put them in a heavily populated area so that when the attack comes, you have large loss of life among non-combatants, and then you face significant blowback because you've now killed civilians that you did not intend to kill. The only way to really get at ISIS, and right now we estimate that they're somewhere between 10 and 20,000 in total complement, and that fact alone, that you can't pin a number closer than 10 or 20,000, suggests that you need boots on the ground, you need to get into the situation, you're going to have to root these fighters out of where they are now burying themselves, and if to try to do that from the air would be very hazardous, because first of all, you may not hit the targets you want to hit, and second, you're likely to hit the ones you don't want to.
I want to go to our callers now. We've got Mikkel on the line in Eau Claire. Mikkel, hi.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to make a couple points on the issue. And first, I believe that we should not be involved in fighting against these radical Islamists. Number one, for the fact that this is essentially they're asking for a holy war here. These are devoted Islam Muslims that are radical, that are completely against Christianity. And they are mainly angry and fighting with us over the fact that if we have been there in all of these countries fighting and killing and making mistakes also. And my biggest concern, I guess, essentially is that as much as everybody wants to believe that these people have no recognition, they're not viable for anybody to give any respect to, but yet that's all we're talking about is them. So we are giving them the respect by acknowledging the fight that they want, and then we're giving them the fight on top of that. This fight, the problem with this fight, my last thing I wanted to say, the problem with the fight is that they are suicidal, homicidal people, and you cannot predict a suicide assassin. There is no stopping somebody from doing them actions.
Mikkel, thanks a lot for the call. Your thoughts there, in part saying, hey, they want the Americans to attack them. That raises their prestige among people who might agree with them.
Yeah, I don't know it's that much. I don't know if that's quite correct. I think what is more likely is that ISIS is intent on certainly eradicating any Christian or Yazidi presence, but this is very much part of what I suppose you would call God wars. It's an intramural spat between Sunni and Shia. And the Iranians have a strong concern about what's happening because the Maliki government had been their client state. And ISIS went after Maliki and the Shia of Iraq very hard. And, of course, ISIS is also battling Assad. And this is the very awkward position we find ourselves in. If we wind up fighting ISIS, we are indirectly helping both Assad and the Iranians. And that's certainly not what we intend to do. But when you get into these very conflicted situations, keep in mind that although Anwar Sadat did not invent or come up with this statement on his own, the Middle East is typically known for the maxim that the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Sometimes this warfare, more so in the Middle East than other places, creates very strange bedfellows. So if we're going to grant Mikkel's point in any respect, I would say it's just that be careful of unintended consequences. And also recognize that ISIS very much is interested in pushing back against the Shia incursion into the Levant, which is why another reason they changed their acronym from ISIS to ISIL.
Mm-hmm. want to go back to our callers now. We've got Molly on the line in Madison. Molly, hi.
Hi. I think, you know, as so often in these disputes, the government and our president are like a no-win situation. I don't think that we are ever really welcomed in our what are viewed as our invasions in these other countries. There may be some segments that want us there. I feel like we are just get sucked into constant prolonged occupations with no positive outcomes for us except investment of troops and loss of lives. And then, but if we don't take strong action, the president is blamed for not creating a strong presence that is feared by the extremists in that part of the world and creating a deterrence. I mean, it's a lose-lose situation in
gotcha.
My mind.
Molly, thanks. A no-win situation, a lose-lose situation for the president. Is there an optimal strategy and outcome, really, Ed?
Rob, Molly is right. This is very complex, and let's keep in mind that no battle plan survives the first encounter with the enemy. The thing that the president has to be very careful of is not setting limits on his options, because this policy will need to be nimble. You need to look at what is happening. Constant reassessment is going to be necessary. That's why it's a mistake to say from the outset there will be no American ground troops. That sends a signal to everyone else. And by the by, imagine you're one of these other countries who now have heard from the White House that Americans will be in the background training, we'll be flying our planes, but the rest of you guys, you do the heavy lifting on the ground. How many people are going to be eager to sign on for that mission? That's the first thing to keep in mind. And second, in terms of this complexity, and it is understandable that we would not want to be involved, but the last 2 weeks have seen a sea change in American public opinion, I would argue largely as a result of the extraordinary brutality of ISIS, decapitating children, crucifying men, raping and burying women alive, and then sawing off the heads.
We'll have to leave it there, Ed. Thank you so much for joining us. That was Edward Terzansky with LaSalle University.